This episode of the Within the Trenches podcast is sponsored by Indiana Nina as well as InDigital Telecom.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good afternoon, this is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 60 of Within the Trenches, and I am recording live from the Marriott East in Indianapolis, Indiana, for the annual NINA conference. And, you know, we're kind of winding down from this week, and it has been an excellent week. And for this episode, I have three guests. And first, I have Kimberly. She's a dispatcher and CTO with Jennings County 911. I also have John. He's a director with Jefferson County 911. And Nicole, who's the assistant director with Montgomery County Communications Center. Oh, that was a lot to get through really quick.
Was a lot.
Yeah. How's it going, everybody?
Great.
Very good. Very good.
So have all three of you been here for the entire conference? Like, were you here for the pre-con or did you just come in yesterday, Wednesday, which was like the beginning of it all?
I came in Monday.
Monday?
Yeah. For everything. It was awesome.
Yes, I came in Monday afternoon.
Yeah. Likewise, I've been here the entire week. So it's been.
So really from everything that you've seen starting from Monday, what has been, I guess, really the highlight that that you've seen so far for each one of you? Whoever wants to go first.
Everything's been a highlight. Uh-huh. Specific instances, hearing Tracy speak, mm-hmm. and the caller's the killer was extraordinary. Brought up so many different things that we can be alerted to and aware of during an initial call. Of course, hearing Kevin speak was wonderful. Mm-hmm. He's always funny and great to listen to. The management, some of the management stuff that we just did was also great for CTOs. Okay. I'm always looking for CTO tips, and then they asked what it is that we might want to see next year. And mm-hmm. one of my big things was I'd really like a community of CTOs so we can correspond and talk back and forth and to build more of a community to that and right. so that we know each other.
Yeah, get some ideas from everybody, pass it around and see what works and what right. doesn't work. And so which one was that? Was that the director or which round table was that one?
That was the management / dispatcher round table.
Round table, okay.
And then we went through, we were in that for a while and then they separated us and then we had our own groups.
Nice.
So
nice. Very nice.
It was nice.
Now, John, what about you?
I think the highlight for me would be Tuesday. We had an all-day class with Kevin Willett. I'd mm-hmm. never had the chance to hear him before, and he was just extremely motivational, excellent speaker, and
yes.
I really enjoyed it. I think so many dispatchers, you know, you can get a negative attitude real easy when you deal with the public and you start to, over time, deal with a lot of people who are calling in things that aren't needed and just a lot of negativity can build right. up in a dispatch center. And he kind of pumps that motivation back into
yes.
you and gets you pumped and excited and motivated and ready to go back and put your heart back into it. So I thought it was really good. And I'm looking forward to maybe bringing him to either our center or trying to get some classes set up in our area in the future where some of my other dispatchers could be able to attend that and hear him as well because he was very motivational.
Yeah, I had him on one of the episodes. Actually, I think it was yesterday I had him on one, and he had it was Spirit to Serve, right? And then
right.
it was They Said What? Right? That was the other one that he had? Well,
right.
I was talking to him about that because we started with the Spirit to Serve and what it all had meant. And then the next one, I really wanted to get to that one with him because at first, you know, honestly, at first I thought it was, you know, callers that call in and it's They Said What, but it wasn't. It was dispatchers and how they might you know, respond to callers, you know, the frequent flyers and that. And I know when I was supervisor, I had people that were, you know, under me that were like that. You know, they would kind of they weren't always on it. You know, when they were on it, they were on it, but then when they were not, it was kind of being rough. And so it was interesting to have him talk about that and, you know, give out some techniques, you know, what to do. And I gave him a scenario as well. I said, you know, you're an assistant director. You have this employee who just is like this, you know, it's condescending and talks down to callers. What do you do? And he went through it in the process, and it was really good to talk with him. I really like talking with him. What about you, Nicole?
This has actually been the first week that I've been able to stay for the whole week. Getting to know the other dispatchers throughout the whole state of Indiana has been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But for me, the powerful moment was the opening ceremonies, seeing some of the awards given away, and then just the pride in remembering why I am here as a dispatcher.
Right.
Just that extra shot, the boost in the arm. From when I first began, knowing the pride and what I'm doing is good, and it's hard, but yet it's a job that I love and respect, and it hit home yesterday in the opening ceremonies.
Yeah, that opening ceremony was very powerful. I mean, you know, the awards and everything, it was really good. But then seeing that video, I don't know what it was about the video. Maybe it was a song that kind of added a little bit to it as well.
Definitely.
But,
absolutely.
You know, seeing all the pictures of everybody and, you know, the family.
Yeah,
you know, the
family,
whole family aspect of it.
Yeah,
it was good. I felt, you know, I'm not in dispatch anymore, mm-hmm. but you know, in my position, what I do, I get to go out and I train, and I still get to meet everybody and hearing everyone's stories. And I think that's why I like doing this so much, is because it makes me feel like I did when I very first started.
Yes.
And it gets me pumped up. So
that
was really good for me as well. You know, I haven't been able to really sit into any of those classes, but the opening ceremony alone was good for me. I really enjoyed that. So what I want to get into now is a little history, you know, how, you know, you got started in the 911 community. Cause you know, it's good for people to hear, you know, these types of stories. And like I was saying, for me, it takes me back to when I first started, and I get pumped up about it. So, I guess whoever wants to start, you know, how you got started into dispatching or, you know, 911 services to begin with.
I was a young 23-year-old who uh-huh. just got out of Vincennes University for law enforcement.
Okay.
Thinking my path was going to be as an officer. I thought I was going to use this as a stepping stone to get a feel for the work and just let them see what kind of worker I am and go from there.
Right.
Quickly, I realized this was me. This was my fit. This, once it got in my blood, it was there. And I've been there since 2000, and I don't see myself going anywhere else. This is just who I am and love what I do.
That's awesome. Now, and I've asked a lot of people this, and I will continue to ask every time, but I guess what was it that really got into your blood? I mean, was it the helping aspect? Was it that little bit of adrenaline that you get when you're taking that call?
Yeah, you get the adrenaline, but I think for me, it felt like every day I was making a difference, whether it be that small little, I helped an elderly lady find the phone number for the water company.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, starting from there to the very big calls where uh-huh. I saved a life by getting that ambulance there when I could. I mean, the sense of accomplishment that I'm helping
right.
and every day walking away that I've done something every day.
Now, what was your training process like?
My training process was, wow, it was eye-opening.
Yeah.
I had no clue. I was, again, 23 walking into thinking I knew what this job was.
And no prior experience,
No
right?
prior experience at all. Didn't sit in a room of dispatch at all.
Now, and you just said you were coming in thinking you knew what it was. So
yeah.
Where was the...
The idea was it was all smooth and, yeah, I'm going to save everyone.
Right.
Every call I get, I am superhero. Nobody's going to fall on my shift, you know.
But right, that, yeah.
That was probably the age and then not really understanding the whole aspect of everything. And I wasn't prepared for also the responsibility.
Yes.
I had no clue.
How about the multitasking? Because there's tons of stuff. I mean, I always joked with people saying, yeah, I can do all this stuff and I can type this. I can go on the radio. I can get on the phone. I can eat my sandwich and hold it back here while on a domestic. And maybe go use the bathroom and still be doing this.
No, that was very daunting at first. I was like, how am I? I'm looking at my training officer going, she just did how many things? And I'm going to, what?
I'm still in awe of my dispatchers. Yeah. I watch them work and see how many things I can do at once.
Yes. It took some time. I'm there now and think, you know, I do this in my sleep now. I could close my eyes and there we go. But starting out, yes, it was very, very daunting. Very, oh, I'm not going to get this.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's always interesting to have somebody new come in and sit with you to observe. And it's awesome when, you know, the crap hits the fan and you're doing all this stuff and yelling all this stuff out. And then you kind of glance over to that person. They're just.
We had one of those. We were in training. I was training a girl and a pursuit started, pushed her back, and there she is taking notes. And my partner and I were just, you get this, I got that, doing all this. And then we stop after it's done, and we're like, what'd you think of that? Well, she had like 2 pages in notes, and it's just like, I can't believe you guys just did all that.
I was like, I'm going to remember this. Didn't you guys write that down? Nope. Nope. It's all up here. Oh, that's awesome. Those are the best moments. Because afterwards, you're like, that's how we do it.
That's right.
We just did that.
That's right. We just got through it. Yeah. Nice.
Remember that. Oh, man. Now, John, how about you? How did you get started in the 911 community?
After I graduated from Indiana State, I went in the U.S. Army, and I was a Signal Corps officer. I was actually in Desert Storm as a communications staff officer for a battalion, combat engineer battalion. And when I got out, I was I liked the Army, a lot of things about it, but not everything. And I thought law enforcement would be a good fit. So when I got out, I joined the – I became a trooper with the Indiana State Police. I did that for quite a while, but my heart was really in aviation, and I had always wanted to try that. And when I had the opportunity, I left the state police to go pursue an aviation career. And I did that for about a decade. And then when the economy went down, a lot of flight departments started closing up and selling their airplanes, and actually worked for 2 different companies that sold their airplanes. And so I started looking for another job, and I saw that there was a 911 director position open for Jefferson County. And I just felt like with my law enforcement background and then my communications background in the Army that it would be a good fit. And so I went ahead and applied for it and went through all the interviewing and actually ended up getting selected for it. And little did I know what I was in for. So.
Well, then coming in to it that way, did you sit with dispatchers to see exactly how everything ran and so that you could become more familiar with it?
I did, yeah. I started going up to the dispatch centers and sitting in and, you know, just trying to get used to it a little bit. Of course, I'd done a little bit of that before with the state police. The state police uses post commanders, which is essentially kind of a desk sergeant type of thing.
Okay.
And so I had done post command before with the state police and, you know, had sat in the dispatch center and helped out. Of course, that was a long time ago. That was back when they didn't have CADs. You wrote the call down on a paper card and the IDEX screen was all green. So.
Yes.
But
the good old days.
But I had just a little, you know, not much, but just a little taste of experience. So I kind of knew what I was getting into there. So, yeah, I did try to get in on some calls. But
I was going to say, did you take some calls?
I did, yeah. In fact, I can remember the first day that I went up to the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department and helped them out a little bit and was trying to learn. And then one of the first calls I took, the guy, I asked for his address, and he gave me the address, and it was a emergency medical call. He said he couldn't breathe, and I transferred him to our EMS department because they have a separate dispatch center, and he didn't respond after that. So luckily, I had stayed on the line and told them what the address was, and they were able to get there and help him out. So I very quickly learned the importance of getting that address right up front, because in this particular case, it was the guy's last words. His last words were his address. And if I hadn't gotten that right up front, people wouldn't have even known where to go. So,
wow. No, that's good to hear that you went in and, you know, sat with dispatch, because, you know, then later on when you're, I don't want it to sound bad, but like, you know, there's conflicts or something, or you have to tell somebody how to do something. It's received better. you know, because you've kind of been there and you've sat with them and they know that you really care. You're not just, you know, the powers that be, so to speak, that are just there, you know, and are not dealing with them. So that's good. I like that you were able to go in there and do it and understand. Or to a point, because you said earlier you're still at awe at some of the stuff that the dispatchers do.
I'm still at the amateur level. I never got enough time in there to become what I would say is a fully qualified dispatcher. But I guess I'm, know just enough to be dangerous, get in there and answer some phones and help out a little bit and take a call. So,
well, we all can be a little dangerous, but that's how we do it, right? Especially on those full moons. Kimberly, how about you? How did you get into it?
Similar to Nicole, I thought, I'm going to be a police officer. And then I had a car accident. Very serious car accident.
Okay.
And had 5 surgeries on my arm and radial nerve damage and et cetera. And so that kind of shifted things. Mm-hmm. And I had mentioned to the sheriff, I was kind of interested. And he said, okay, well, he was the lieutenant sheriff then. When he became sheriff, he actually gave me a phone call. He said, you were interested in dispatching, right? And I said, yeah. Well, I need 6 people because we're bringing in the 911 system. So he hired 6 people. I was one of them. And when I first started dispatching, and that was in 91, we still got physical directions. Mm-hmm. Turn at the old round barn, because where do you live? Rural Route 1, which, you know, encompassed miles of area.
Right.
And we started that way. And I was hooked very quickly. That's 23 years ago.
Dang, that's awesome. But what was it like for you taking like your first 911 calls? Was it nerve wracking or?
It was. You have that deer in the headlight, that, you know, fight, flight or freeze when you hear someone who's obviously in a very, you know, traumatized place. Mm-hmm. And learning how to breathe through that and not go on the ride and yet remain in care and find a way to help them through that. That still is fascinating and is to me such a great honor. And one of the priorities in my professional life is to constantly do everything that I can do to learn how to breathe through that, control my breathing, control my voice, make sure that my tone and tempo stay the same so that my officers, whether I'm dispatching them on a bin check or on a fatality, that my voice sounds the same.
Right.
And they can tell from my words and not from my tone what's going on. So, and doing that for my callers also, and training my people and helping them to learn how to do that.
I was just
going to
ask you that because it said
that's one of my huge priorities.
Yeah, you're also a CTO. So I was going to ask you if that same, you know, the philosophy, you know, if
absolutely.
You teach that as well.
And I'll teach them to, you know, one of my big things is I hate to hear somebody tell a caller to calm down because we all, that's going to piss me off immediately.
Right.
So the big thing is, you know, to help them to learn how to breathe. Okay, I'm here with you. We've got them started. Now let's take a breath together. And Kevin had mentioned that. And that's something that, you know, I brought in a lot of years ago is and giving the dispatcher, unless you're a psychopath, you're in reaction to what's going on.
Right.
So the whole I'm tough and I can handle that is like, listen, you're having a reaction to this. So help your body breathe through it.
Right.
Help your body move that adrenaline. And I'm here with you. And as you know, you learn more and more, you're going to be able to get better and better at this. But it's like anything else. It's muscle memory. So you start teaching yourself how to do that and respond that way. And I can tell you it works. And I've had officer after officer after officer walk up to me and say, your voice is amazing when it's hitting the fan. And I felt like I was going to lose it. And I heard your voice and it was so calm and it immediately calmed me down. And that's gold.
Damn.
And how much better?
Wish I would have had you as my CTO.
What more can I give them than be as calm and cool and keep my voice completely calm? And for me to do the work, because I've had to do the work to get it to stay that way. I can feel you know, my adrenaline. I can feel, it sounds like it's quivering. And then I listened to it on a playback and it was calm. Well, that's what I can give them.
Man. So anybody listening to this, if you take anything, there's one of the things there that you should take from that. Cause yeah, I will admit I was one of those people when I was in dispatch and I had, you know, somebody calling in and it was, you know, just hysterical. I would say that. What would piss you off? The, you know, getting calm down. And I mean, I didn't say it like a total jerk.
Sure,
but,
sure.
But, you know, I can see where it would still piss somebody off.
It
you know,
sounds you're, condescending.
You're in the craziest, you know, situation because you're calling 911 because you're having a, you know, that something bad is happening, not because you're having a good day. And you've got somebody on the phone telling you to calm down. And yeah, I can see where that would piss me off too. Man, I got to go back and tell myself, yeah, I got to find a DeLorean and go back in time and tell myself, hey, stupid, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Oh, man. So what about you, Nicole? What was your first calls like when you were taking them?
I was scared to death.
Yeah.
I was praying that the 911 phone never rang for 8 hours. I honestly was. I started out after being trained, starting on 11 to 7 shift. Mm-hmm. Two of my 4 days on were alone. And it was just, yeah, just hoping. I just got through that day. And I knew I had it. I knew it was just having to put those into action.
Right.
You know, I wanted to be right. I wanted to do everything right. And I didn't want to mess anything up all at all. You know,
yeah,
it was
exactly.
Just like, just don't call. Just wait. Everything will be okay.
So it was like your nerves were going.
Nerves.
But once you got into the call, you
absolutely.
Were good to go.
And I think it was good, too, starting off a little bit of alone because mm-hmm. there were nights where I had 5 pages of notes of calls that I wasn't able to get in yet. But got through it.
Yeah.
Got those calls in.
Right.
And when it walked out the door, I just did this. I just did what I needed to do. Mm-hmm. I can do this. So it kind of felt like all those things thrown at me, now bring it on. I can do this now because I've just proven to myself.
Right. So it trained you in
absolutely.
A sense to be able to be better. And then
absolutely.
You know, now you can teach the same thing to other people.
Yes.
That's awesome. What are some calls or situations that you've dealt with that have really stuck with you throughout the years? Anybody who wants to start?
I have several serious ones, but I'll tell you a funny one first.
All right. Sounds good.
Funny ones
are always good.
Was I was a brand new, fresh dispatcher. Of course, as arrogant as they come, I got this. And
no.
Oh, yes. And was working third shift with a reserve officer because we were short. And he's the sweetest man. He's still a reserve in the county that I live in, which is not the county that I work in. But he talks like this and everything's very paced and very slow. He's taking a call and I can tell that something's going on. I'm kind of standing up, hovering over him. I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? I'm like, and I turn, I'm like nudging him. I'm like, Rick, what's going on? He turns very slowly and looks at me after about 5 minutes and he goes, somebody's been shot. Like, where? So as things unfold, I find out that somebody had been shot with a BB gun.
Oh, well, that's good then.
So that I've never forgotten that. I remember being terrified when he said that, and but it ended up being a BB gun. But that sticks out as one of my great, sweet memories of when I was new and how quickly we jump to conclusions and how we get scared and also just how things happen. 1 minute it's calm and the next minute you're taking the call of your life.
Right. Yeah,
absolutely. I had one of those experiences when I'd been in the job at least probably going on my 7th year. It was a morning that I happened to be alone until director got in at 8. Mm-hmm. And took a phone call from a mother who was a bus driver. Who had come back around her round to pick up her 13-year-old son, and she found him dead on the back porch. He had unfortunately took his own life. And as she's hysterical, obviously uncontrollable. She's crying so loudly that the next door neighbor comes over, and I've got the address, I've got people en route, but all I'm thinking is, where is the school bus full of kids? Are they seeing this?
Right. Yeah.
I obviously can't get her to answer. But I found out later that it was actually the boy was in the back of the house where the kids couldn't see. But it's one of those, my director came in and she just knew by the look on my face. She goes, "You need to walk away. I've got to leave. I've got to take five. Got to get out here." But it's one of those that will always stick with you. It's something that I was only able to get through, fortunately, with one of the other dispatchers who was there, to just bounce that off and just talk about it. And that's if you guys get anything out of this is, if there's somebody in that room that you can trust and just let your feelings go, latch on to them and do it, because I don't know where I'd be without Sherry, who is one of the dispatchers I work with. Without her, I don't think I'd have this long of a career.
Yeah. And look, you're still here. And
absolutely.
Yeah. That's another thing that, you know, a lot of people, I'm guilty of it. I was really stubborn in that fact that if I took a call like that and someone would say, "Are you all right?" Like, of course, that's right. Nothing. But in the back of my head, I'm like, damn, that was something else. And, you know, I wouldn't talk to anybody about it, or at least I would try to. And then I was like, maybe they don't really understand. Right. So, you know, it was hard for me in the beginning to open up to, but then through like blogging and writing down everything that happened, that was therapeutic for me, just like this is here,
right?
You know, what we're doing right now, you know, talking about certain things, I was able to get through all of that. And then, you know, finally opening up with coworkers. Right. So,
and it took me a long time to tell myself, this isn't a sign of weakness. I'm not being weak.
Yeah. That was the thing. Yeah.
And that was my biggest issue. It was myself.
Right.
Thinking, okay, I'm saying this, but that makes me weak. Well, that's so dumb.
Yeah.
Looking back, as you say, going back in time, if I could tell myself one thing, is don't feel like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not that at all. How about you, John? Anything that in coming up into, you know, even when you were starting out in dispatch in the center, or, you know, when you were line of police work or anything like that, that you dealt with, it kind of sticks with you.
Oh, you know, I mean, when I think back to the road, probably the thing that sticks to my mind the most was the very first fatal accident I covered. And, you know, to be a young trooper on the road and come up on a scene where you see someone, the fatalities never really bothered me if they were already passed away when you got there.
Yep.
But to see someone dying on the side of the road was always traumatic, you know. And I can remember the first case when I was working up by the toll road in northern Indiana, and a truck hit the guardrail. And it was an older couple, and the lady didn't have her seatbelt on. So when they hit the guardrail, the door popped open. She came out on the pavement and hit the side of the pavement. And of course, this was in the wintertime, snowy. And you know, I can still remember that, the pool of blood running off the side of the road, and that's something I'll never forget. And it's the same way in the dispatcher. It's no different. Everybody in public safety wants to help, and, you know, there's nothing worse than not feeling like you can help. And I'm sure a lot of dispatchers get that. And I feel like that sometimes, where I want to be able to jump through the phone and be able to help somebody. And,
right.
You know, we all like to be in control. And, you know, sometimes on the phone, you can't even get the person to give you an address so that you can get help on the way. So that's what sticks to my mind from actually working the road. But, you know, over taking calls, probably that very first week we were just talking about, I had a little string of people who were dying on me. And the dispatchers still give me a hard time when I walk in the dispatch center and tell me that I'm bad luck and I'm going to cause a bunch of deaths just by being there.
So yeah,
you're that guy.
Yeah, he's that guy.
First week.
You walking into the dispatch center you're the Q word. And you're the full moon as you're walking in. So,
right.
So do each of you have like a CISM team, you know, critical incident stress management, or, I mean, do you have a group? No,
we don't.
No.
John? We're a pretty small center, and we've certainly gone to some of the training and found that there are resources around the state that we can use if we mm-hmm. need them, but we haven't set one up ourselves. So, but I think what we would do is, if we had a big incident where we needed that, there's certainly resources around the state of Indiana, and we have names and people that we can call to do that. I know the Indianapolis Fire Department, for example, has a team. The state police has a team. There's different resources out there that you can call and get help, even if you are a small center.
Okay. And Kimberly, how about?
We don't have a team at our department. However, we've called in the de-stressing team several times for incidents that have gone on. A regional team that travels and takes care of several counties.
And dispatch is involved when you do it then?
Yes. Or,
the only reason I ask is because my experience with it has been whenever there's been a huge incident that's happened and we are the first responders, mm-hmm. we're kind of pushed, you know, off to the side. And
that's changing.
I always like to get everyone's opinion, though, on why it seems to be like that. Like, well, why do you think that is? Why do you think the ones who take the call are the ones
I
that
think
kind
it's
of get pushed
we're
off?
Unseen still. I mean, we're not seen as being the first responder because mm-hmm. we're not technically physically on
right.
scene.
Okay. Yeah.
Unfortunately, because right. there's been quite a few debriefings we've had, mm-hmm. police involved shootings, things like that, that we could give a vital information in this debriefing, but I think it's failed to remember. Well, yeah, they did get the first. We were the first to be notified. That's my feeling.
Okay. Anyone else?
My feeling on that is that it kind of started a lot of years ago when the women were typically the ones who were the dispatchers, and that there was a secretarial stigma around that, and that there was a devaluing that went on, or a not valuing enough. And another piece of the puzzle, I think, is the fact that we grow up and all of the things that we learn in dispatch are very different compared right. to the way that we grew up. Like mm-hmm. interrupting someone is not polite. So we learned that you don't interrupt. No one has a real idea of actually what a dispatcher does and what it entails to be one, and the level of multitasking that it takes and the level of brain function that it takes. And because they don't understand that, and they've not sat in that seat, and they don't understand what it's like to be accountable and responsible at that level, it's not appreciated because it's not understood, mm-hmm. because we don't grow up learning in school how to do all of those things. In fact, we're doing it on a phone. And as we know, 87% of communication is nonverbal. So as soon as you become a dispatcher, that's all taken away.
Yeah.
And then you start learning how to do that from a hearing standpoint and from a kinesthetic standpoint, and what you're feeling and what your gut feeling is.
Right.
It's not yet appreciated because it's not known. There's only a group of us who understand how to do that at that level. And that's why I think that's one of those things that it's yet to be valued. And that's why we tend to get forgotten.
Yeah, that's true. What about you, John? What do you think?
Well, I think one of the big advantages of this trend of dispatch centers consolidating mm-hmm. is that you're increasing the professionalism, you're increasing the management, and I think as a result, there's your equal partners out there. You know, we got a consolidated central dispatch center with a director and a management team. And I think as this continues to evolve in this direction, that it becomes more and more of a profession. And I agree. You know, at the beginning, they were looked at kind of as secretaries and didn't have the respect level, and they were kind of forgotten about. And even think about a typical sheriff's department. A typical sheriff has a police department to run. He's got a GL to run and probably a dispatch center. Well, mm-hmm. the dispatch center is often the stepchild and just gets forgotten about. And I think the same way when they have a critical incident, they get forgotten about. But
yeah.
I think with the consolidations and the professional management and independent central dispatch agencies that that's beginning to change. So
would you say that like what we're doing here for this week, that the conferences, you know, things like that is really recognizing dispatchers more? A lot, and people are starting to come more to it as they hear more about it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, going into the wrap-up of this episode, anybody who is thinking about, you know, coming to a conference like this to learn more and network, you know, what advice do you have to give someone that, you know, to give them that push, that extra push? Any one of you.
Be open to meeting everyone here. Mm-hmm. Go up to somebody that's not in the group you came up here with.
Right.
You know, or if you're going to lunch with your group, sit with another group and start having conversations. Say, hey, where are you from? How long you been there? You know, what's your shifts like? What's your busy time? Just open that door, and there's so many great stories from everyone here that it's just amazing. And again, you build back that pride of what you're doing, and you get reminded that you're not the only one here. You're not alone. Everybody else is having hard times with calls, staffing. It's a reminder you're not alone.
Right. Anyone else?
The same as Nicole said, you know, basically be brave. I was the same way when I was younger, very arrogant, and I've got this and things don't bother me and it's not that hard. And, you know, and the universe conspired to show me that wasn't true because I had some calls that, you know, and some things happen. I've been on the other side of a 911 call. And after that occurred, that changed my whole perspective mm-hmm. on everything in my life and how I dispatched. And it taught me a lot. And it also taught me how to really grow up and be a real, real decent human being, and brought a lot of compassion back for me. So that whole the whole thing about I'm so tough, I've got this. We already know that we're tough. We're doing this job. We're strong. We can handle it. And it's okay to ask for help.
Right. And then, John, from you coming from, you know, having like a law enforcement background, would you say that it might be beneficial for even maybe officers to come at maybe even for one day, or even if it was like an hour or something, just to sit in the class to see what, you know, the dispatchers go through or what they're learning that maybe that can help them in a sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you think it'd be beneficial?
Yeah, I think it'd be very beneficial. And, you know, the most important thing is for the dispatchers mm-hmm. themselves is to get here, to come to the conference, I think. You know, we've got, what, 93 counties or 92 counties, something mm-hmm. like that in Indiana. And what was our attendance here? We had, I don't know, just over 100 or so. And what we really need to do is emphasize to these directors and managers and even the dispatchers themselves that they need to come to these mm-hmm. conferences. They need to come to these kind of trainings. They need to be around other dispatchers so that they don't feel, you know, you begin to get a sense of pride, a sense of professionalism when you get here and you get around these kind of people who have years and years of experience. And just exactly what you were saying, they're not alone. They begin to realize that the problems they're having, the issues that they're dealing with, mm-hmm. whether you're a dispatcher or a 911 director or a communications supervisor, all these issues are common to every dispatch center. And you're dealing with once you find out that you're dealing with the exact same problems, the exact same issues that everybody else is dealing with, it makes you feel like you're part of a group of people who are not alone. There's other people who understand exactly what you're going through, and you can sit there and laugh and cry and talk about all these issues.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really good. I just would really like to see more and more people coming to the Indiana conference, especially now that we're combined as a combined Indiana APCO. You know, that was one of the things, try to combine it, get more involvement, get more people here. And I don't think the people who've never attended the conference even realize what they're missing. I think if they would just attend one time, they'd come back every single year.
Absolutely. I so agree.
Well, there you go. I know with all of your words, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more people coming from listening to you, you know, talk about this because you've experienced it. So I want to thank you all very much for joining me on this episode. I appreciate it. You know, the stories were great, and you know, the knowledge that you have and were able to give to others who are going to be listening to this is invaluable. So thank you very much for being on this episode. And for those who are listening, if you ever want to email the show, or comment, you know, anything like that, or if you want to be on the show, you can email wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, which is @911podcast. And you can find us on Facebook, and that is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And then this episode will be up with all the other ones from this week and available 24/7 on thejabberlog.com, iTunes, Spreaker, and Stitcher Radio. Have a good one, everybody.